Hello again, friends. Welcome to My Back 40 and the My Back 40 podcast. I'm your host, Steve O'Shaughnessy. I'm still remote. I'm staying here at Curtis Litton's house. He's the owner and operator of Spandex Panda, and he's also the owner and operator of Pink Weasel Coffee. And we got together to have a podcast out here while I was crashing in his house. And it's been great. It's been great to be out here. The weather in the Okanagan has been atypical, I think. It's very cold. It's been super cold and kind of unusually cold for this region. And it seems like it's really affecting the agriculture. So it'll be interesting to see how this region does after what I think is going to be a slow start for them. Why am I out here? I came out here, well, after the Tour Divide, doing the start there. And those of you who are signed up as Patreons, you can listen to that fully, pretty much unedited footage from the last, or from the day before and the morning of the start of the 2024 Tour Divide. And what an awesome time that was. I just had such a blast, walking around and talking to people and just taking in the vibe of the divide is what I'm calling it. The vibe there is just, it's palpable because of all the, just the nervous energy, the excitement, the fear, it's all just like a mix of emotions. And I had a really good time coming out there. So those of you who are on my Patreon will now have access to 4 hours and something like 15 minutes of conversations from Canmore and Banff the day before and Banff the morning of. And I know it's a lot. I know there's tons in there. If you fast forward to the last half, which starts 2 hours 16, I should have it in front of me, but I don't. You can just listen to the morning of, and it's just more conversations. I get to talk with Ulrich and Justinus, Megan Hakkinen, who's out there just crushing it right now, which is amazing. And just had a super, really good time doing that. So yeah, it was a great opportunity to come out here. And then I've got, I won't get too much into it. I've got my appointment for my second consultation for my hip, which I'm hoping to get it done in the fall, but we'll see. Waiting lists and all. But I've people I share that with always come back and say, oh, my so-and-so had one. My friend had a hip replacement. And you come back like, awesome. So I have my fingers crossed that I'll just deal with this issue and then I can get back on my bike and ride to Mexico again, because that's all I was feeling when I was at the Tour Divide start. And what's funny is I had all the luggage in my car, and I'm pretty sure I had everything I needed. I could literally have packed my bike and jumped on the trail, but obligations, I can't do that. So we had a really good time out there. What else is going on? So yeah, and then it's back to reality and back to looking for work. So I'm gonna have to get my resumes all polished up. And I just ask of you, if you're finding value in the My Back 40 podcast and you want to support it, there's lots of ways you can do it. You can review, share, rate the podcast on your favorite listening platform. You'll find it all over the place. Just Google it. You can chip in with PayPal. You can find links to that on my website, and you can join up for my Patreon. So if you sign up at the $5 level, you're going to get early access. So I've got the 2024 Tour Divide on there now. I'm going to have Pink Weasel out there probably, what day is it today? Sunday. And then I've got a great podcast coming out with Nick Pollard. He's on Instagram at The People Pleaser. And he is a former people pleaser and recovered alcoholic. And he is helping people to recover from both of those things. And if you check him out, his reels are fantastic. And we had a really, really good conversation. I was super nervous to talk to him, to be honest. You know, you often don't know, like, how you're going to gel with somebody. And my opinion of it, the way I saw the conversation was we gelled right away. And it was super fun to talk to him. And at the end, we decided that we were going to have to do a part two because it was such an enjoyable chat. And I'm hoping to do that fairly soon. The next podcast time he wants to book with me is like a 2-hour slot. So that just goes to show you just how great that chat was and how deep we went on a lot of different topics. So I'm really, really excited to bring you another podcast with Nick coming up in the future. So going back, if you sign up for my Patreon, you'll get early access to those episodes. And with my current career situation, expect to see a lot more conversations coming your way. So make sure you subscribe, share, rate, and review the podcast. Like I said, subscribe so you don't miss it when an episode comes out. And you can follow me on myback40_podcast. And that's a really great way to keep tabs on what I'm up to. You know, I know I have a really hard relationship with social networking. On one side, I think it's so important for me to be able to market that way. But the area can be, especially Facebook. I have a really hard time with Facebook. For folks of you who have friended me on Facebook, my accounts are kind of weird. I've got a personal account and the MyBack40 account, and I can't merge them. And everything I post on Instagram goes to Facebook. But I play on Instagram most of the time. All of the time. Or you can find me on LinkedIn as well. But I'm pretty much an Instagram guy, and I just can't be bothered with Facebook. So if it seems like I'm ignoring comments or whatnot, I do my best to get in there. But I do not prefer to enter that universe. I like to stay on the Instagram side. And it's what's funny too is I know they're owned by the same company, Meta. But to me, they feel like totally different environments. So anyway, I'm not going to go on about that. So lots of different ways you can support the podcast. You can also sign up for Dynamic Cyclist, strength training, mobility, stretching, yoga, coaching programs, all in the palm of your hand with their Dynamic Cyclist app. And if you use the code MB40, you're going to save 25%. And that's a great way to support the podcast as well. And also support Redshift Sports. Redshift Sports. Got to work on my enunciation today. And you've might have noticed that I'm kind of losing my voice. I feel like I've been talking for 4 days, constantly talking. And I love it. You can also support Redshift Sports. If you use the code MB40, you're going to get 15% off suspension seat posts, stems, pedals. They have some great cockpit products, a great kitchen sink bar. Lots of awesome product there, the gravel riding and bike packing specific gear. So check it out, redshiftsports.com, and use the code MB40 to save 25%. All right, this podcast was great. I've really been enjoying using my recorder as a handheld. Last year when I did the Tour Divide thing, I wasn't using it right. A lot of the audio was overdriven. And that's my bad. I didn't have a lot of field experience with that box. I was always had it connected with mics. So I never really had to manage the box itself and where to put the mic and how the gains work. But anyway, this one, I was here in Curtis's house at Pink Weasel Coffee, and we did a roast together. We chatted coffee. It was really fun to just kind of delve into a different topic of conversation. And I used to be a coffee roaster back in the day, and it was really fun talking coffee again and learning Curtis's process and how he's learned and what he focuses on. And he's been, what can you say about Curtis? He's had his fingers in a lot of different pies, customer service, dining, wine, coffee, bars, nightclubs. He has a discerning taste for coffee, all things, having anything to do with tasting anything. He's very passionate about quality food, locally grown food, small business, Canadian small business. It was a really good time. And we actually did a roast during the podcast. So there'll be a bit of background fan noise and whatnot, but considering the environment I came from roasting, it's pretty quiet. So we had a great chat, and I hope you enjoy it. Make sure you head on over to pinkweaselcoffeecompany.com. Check out their website, check out their blends, and make sure you stay tuned to the podcast or keep your eyes peeled on the store, because there just might be an MB40 coffee blend coming your way. I'm pretty excited about it. So let me know what you think. Let me know what you want to taste, and make sure you give Curtis a follow. Just search Instagram for Pink Weasel or Spandex Panda. Follow both of those accounts, and you can keep tabs on Curtis. So without further delay, I bring you Curtis Litton. We're here at the HQ of Pink Weasel Coffee.
The Weasel Hole.
The Weasel Hole. This is Curtis. Say hi.
Hi.
Curtis Litton, formerly of, well, still of Spandex Panda.
Yeah, basically the club now, the Spandex Panda Velvet Club. That's the direction. The clothing line is kind of still exists, but yeah, now we got some sponsors involved, and we're doing a little. Well, Ricardo's off today. I get to play roasting guy, which is kind of fun. I watched him do it. He knows. Yeah, I'll just follow his notes.
Yeah. So.
But yeah, Steve's got the real roasting professional.
No.
This guy's got a background all the time.
Yeah, it's interesting.
You might not have known about him.
Yeah, it's interesting being in here and standing in front of an R1 roaster, a 1 kilogram roaster. I was working on 280 kilogram roasters.
So a little bigger.
A little bit bigger. But you know what? It's funny. It's just like the mini me of the thing I was using. You know, it's got yep. got like the cooling tray and the trier and. Yeah, very cool. It's a very cool unit. So how long have you been... I mean, this has been a passion project. You started this when?
Well, it's over a year. Like, I've been personally... Ricardo's been roasting longer. I've been playing around with this little thing, though, for about a year.
Yeah.
Or over a year, I guess, now. And that was kind of the first... Let's just roast some coffee, have some fun, drink some good coffee, understand what coffee is. But the commonalities, like having worked in the hospitality and then... the wine industry for years, there's some crazy parallels, which yeah. is kind of the cool thing with it. And being in the Okanagan, we get a chance to work, like share, I guess, a lot of the flavors with people in the wine industry and the beer industry and the, you know, just the hospitality industry that enjoy the flavors and all the palate kind of teasers that exist out there. Like the tasting wheels are the same and stuff like that. So what do you smell? What do you taste? How do you prepare it?
Yeah.
It's all fair game.
Are the tasting wheels the same between wine and coffee? I mean, roughly.
Yeah, they're very similar. I think the coffee one, it even gets more detailed because there are more potential flavor profiles and stuff like that.
Maillard, all the Maillard reaction notes, like everything you get out of that browning and stuff.
Well, and the crazy thing is with coffee roasting, like you can do a lot of things with one bean. It's not just, there's only one way to roast it.
Yeah.
Like... you could, it's kind of like wine. You could give it to 5 different roasters and you probably won't get the same taste or flavor or result or roast off of it, no matter how much you try, because everything's a little bit different. There's a lot of little variables. So,
well, and some of the variables would be the soil it's grown in, the environment, the elevation, the way it's fermented, all the things, right?
Yeah, just understanding all those that even exist.
Yeah.
And
people probably don't even know that coffee is a fermented thing. Right?
No. Yeah. Just like, I like Brazil. Really?
Do you?
All Brazilian coffees. You've tried all of them, farmers and processes and small and like, it's interesting sometimes as to, as you get into, what's in your cup kind of question to people or what are you drinking as to, what are you drinking? What do you know about it? And some people are really like, you can really go down, we joke, down the weasel hole now, down the rabbit hole of like,
the weasel.
Like, what is it that you're smelling or tasting, or what do you know about the coffee, and can you appreciate this or not, or how do you prepare it? And some people are down to like the microgram and everything's
you're kind of like that.
We're working on it. It's educational purposes.
Well, I've had some pretty fantastic coffee here, I must say.
Well, and you drink it out of your left hand, your right hand, it tastes different.
Yeah.
But, we're going to try to create a Back 40 blend?
I think we're going to try to create my Back 40 blend.
Sure, why not?
So, what do you have in your green bean here?
Well,
Mexico. Can we put Mexican in it? I'm a huge fan of Mexican.
Okay. I've got some. So from Mexico too, right now I've got 2 different beans, or there's 2 different beans in the roaster here. So we've got some from Chiapas and some from Veracruz. We'll probably use some of the Veracruz ones, because if I compare right now,
I want to look at some of these green beans.
Yeah. Well, here, do this. I'll put them side by side.
2 coffee roasters standing in the same room. It's pretty fun, actually. Because often we'd get lots of coffee in. Like, when I say lots, I don't mean a lot of. I mean lots from different.
Different origins and
yeah, you'd always smell them, and you can smell taints in them and stuff. What else is in there? Yeah, I was always a big fan of Mexican. Like a single origin Mex was really nice. What else can we add to that?
We got some from Uganda.
Yeah, don't like
I've
make
got
sure.
A Robusta.
Uganda,
got some,
huh? What's the
some Brazilian stuff? Right
what's
now?
The flavor notes in the Ugandan?
Well, it's
depending on how you roast it, obviously, but
This is, it's actually this little guy in the corner right here that you took a picture of.
Yeah.
It's that Bugizu. So it's bright. I don't know. Some guys use it for instant coffee, I guess. But I like it. Like, it's, well, in that assumingly medium blend.
Yeah.
That was that one that adds a little bit more kind of kick profile. Not necessarily acidic, but just kind of brightens it up a bit.
Yeah.
Versus only the bolder, chocolatier, nutty notes kind of thing. This adds a little bit more to that. So, but again, I could, if we roast it a little lighter or a little darker, it'll change it.
Huh.
So this is where your palate profiling, your expertise. Man.
It's been a while though.
The pressure's on now.
Oh, you have a couple different Mexas, eh?
Yeah.
Hey, is Mexican hard to get? Like, in terms of importing Mexican coffee?
Tuesdays are way easier usually than Wednesdays for getting Mexican in, but... And that's kind of the fun of the game right now is... We've got some great green bean importers, suppliers, sourcers. John down at Route 86 has been bringing in some great beans for us, which has been fun. Carlos over at Single Origin, same thing. Those are two guys that we've more recently probably worked with. I tried some small stuff from Sweet Maria's out of California, and there's a lot of options that exist nowadays. So it's not really. Let's put this in the right bin at least, and we'll. This is our number five that we're gonna roast. Number one is that Uganda. But see, this is kind of like, I don't know, it's like blending cognac or something. Like, how much of what percentage do you want to put in? Do you want to blend? Do you want it as a single origin? There's the first question, really, half the time, right?
Yeah.
Like, blending, especially in the wine game, kind of gives you that opportunity to I guess, compensate for any shortcomings or if there's a flaw or... if it's lacking something or if something's too intense, you can dial down or add another bean or two beans and increase it. Whereas if it's a single origin, however you roast it, and that's all you get.
Yeah.
So good, bad, or otherwise.
Yeah.
But
do you have a roaster's blend? So the place, I'm not going to say where I worked.
Yeah.
But where we worked, if there was coffee that was out of spec, we kind of had a blend that was the roaster's blend. A lot of people like that blend.
Yeah.
And it's a triple blend.
Okay.
Of like a light, medium, and dark.
Yeah.
So if there was something that was a bit, dark was a bit under or maybe slightly over, as long as it wasn't too dark.
It went into that?
It went into that blend.
Yeah.
So something that was medium but out of spec or a light that was out of spec, we'd add it to that blend.
Well,
kind of as a way to hide the mistake, really.
Well, and see, what we've been working on here is to take these beans and do a light, a medium, and a dark. And so, based on using the little dye fluid afterwards, we can run through the colors.
Oh, is that an Eggtron?
Yeah.
Yeah, a spectrograph?
Then we can figure out what does it fit into. So if all of a sudden we were roasting for it to be a medium, and it went a little longer, it got a little hot, a little too fast. Okay, well now it went from like, let's say it's the number two on our list of beans that we blend. Well, now that's become the number five.
Right.
And, or like, maybe it didn't go as long as we wanted it to, or we thought it was.
Underdeveloped or overdeveloped.
Yeah, right.
Or
so then we just shift it, and it gets blended into a blend differently, and the percentage of that bean changes in the blend. So there's no really, we don't waste it ever.
No. That's what the roaster's blend's for, is to not waste coffee. I think a lot of people don't realize that a pound of coffee, that's one tree of coffee.
Yeah.
Yeah. So in my world, when I was roasting on a big roaster, if you fucked up a roast, like honestly, I've seen roasters cry.
Well,
because it's sad. Because you basically
think about the money, the time,
not even like go way back. Think about the farmer and the time and effort and money that they put into growing this and caring and nurturing this plant. And then we roast it with as much care as possible, and then we make a mistake
and
it goes in the garbage. Like, we can't use it at all. Sometimes that happens.
Well, right? But okay, even speak to the whole, the farmer that's the one, the sweat, the sacrifice, the negotiation of it all.
All of it.
As to what grading your beans are and all that. And then you get it to a cafe and you bedazzle it with all these syrups and sprinkles and whipped creams and profiles of flavors that you're like, did you need specialty coffee to do that? Like,
no, yeah. That's a whole other thing.
Like,
I do, you know what? And truth be told, I often sweeten my coffee. And I often add things to my coffee. I'm feeling pressure. and it's a joy because when you're drinking fine coffee, you want to taste it black first.
Yeah.
Right?
Because some coffees have some great flavors just...
I haven't felt the need to do anything to the coffee I've been consuming here. Whew. Like the one... Yeah, yeah, no whatever.
Pressure right now. No. It's a live podcast. He's standing inside here. All right, Steve, that's you. Get out of here.
No, but yeah, like what you were saying about that last one, it was like the sweetness of it, right?
Yeah.
And you know, a lot like of people just...
that's a natural
just,
thing in the coffee. We didn't... Totally.
Acid.
Yeah.
Yeah, and sweetness are kind of the things you're trying to balance a For lot, sure. right?
But that's kind
What of, are you pulling out of there? Is this part of the My Back 40 blend?
It could be. Well, it's also
Ugandan. I was thinking Ugandan. It was like, I was kind of wondering if it's because I like the Mexican has a kind of a, I don't know how you would describe it. Kind of like, it's kind of a bite to like, I don't even know how you describe it. So I'm out of the game a bit.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Saying. Like, I don't know if it's a, it's just the way it's balanced. And then when I think of African coffees, I think they're usually on more on the fruity side.
Right.
Would I be right in saying that?
No, absolutely. For sure, 100%. And that's why this game is fun. Because it's hard. It's not like you're never wrong. It's just a matter of, like, when you're looking for that cup. We had this conversation recently with somebody. It was, you know, what's a good cup of... Actually, somebody even shared the... James Hoffman. You know, like, what's a good cup of coffee? It's kind of like this game of you're just... If there's no flaws in it, you just want to sit down and enjoy it. And there's nothing too overbearing or overpowering of anything. It's just a comforting, warm cup of well-balanced coffee.
Yeah.
And balance is that beautiful thing of, like, there should be a little acidity and a little darkness. And everybody's interpretation is a little different. And, you know, talking to a guy yesterday, we dropped off some beans at Granny's up just across the road here. And, like, you know, yeah, I can drink cowboy coffee that's percolated for, you know, an hour, and
yeah.
You're backpacking somewhere and you don't have all the resources, but can you appreciate a pour over some single origin? Sure. Can you, you know, do you like an espresso with something? Sure. Like, they're all options. Like, white coffee versus black coffee. Do you like the cappuccino and the lattes and stuff? There's a place and a time and whatever. And then can you just, you know, enjoy a drip or a French press? Same coffee.
Yeah. But it's amazing how the preparation makes a huge difference. Like, whether you're doing a pour over or an AeroPress or cowboy coffee or like I've been French pressing for over 30 years. That's kind of my jam. That's the way I've always done it. And it's a ritual, right, for me to press a coffee. I have my glass press with me on my trip.
That's the biggest thing that is kind of fun with the coffee world. Like, I was just talking to some friends last weekend. We were talking about what coffee, how it plays into people's daily lives, and some more maybe consciously or subconsciously even know about it, but like just that routine. It's like some people get up and they do yoga, or they, I don't know, they read something inspirational on their board, or whatever it is, or you do 20 push-ups in the morning, or you go for a bike ride, or like, there's just these routines that kind of set people up for their day of whatever they're going to encounter. And coffee is one of those things for a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
As to how is their day kind of going to go, whether that routine, I guess, is you're making your own cup, you're going to some cafe because, you know, it's the ambiance, the atmosphere, the smile of the barista, whatever it is. Like, that's just your lifestyle. And good, bad, it's just how people exist. And that's the fun thing, I guess, that's enjoyable, is how something so simple, like a cup of coffee, how much variation there is in a day. This is just so we can see inside.
I was just going to say.
But, yeah, we'll get this guy going here right away. And, but yeah, okay, coffee-wise, well, so yeah, we'll figure it out. Like, well, we already tried some upstairs or whatever, but this is the whole game too, of making the blend of, you know, if we decide on, well, I want two beans or three beans or four beans. Okay. What do you want to what flavor are you trying to achieve, or mouthfeel, or, you know, preparation style, maybe. I don't know. Like, all those things are possible. So do we try to make a, like, or do you want to make a blend that would be the perfect thing that if we had a ground up, all you have to do was open it up and you're out on a bike packing trip, like the tour?
Yeah.
Tour Divide right now.
Something like, quick.
Sure.
I don't bring a stove with me. You have to start cold brewing it.
Which is a different kind of coffee.
Overnight brewing while you're in your tent. You just, yeah.
Well, I
brew it cold and then press it in the morning.
We got this one, a buddy right now in the Spanish Panavello Club, Troy, got into some more bike racing and wants some of the caffeine kick.
Mm.
And so Robusta does have more caffeine than Arabica. And so we just, well, let's bump up the Robusta in it. And, you know, if you've always been a fan of that big, bold, or intense flavored coffee kind of thing, like dirty coffee, maybe, I don't know, whatever you want to call it, but and it's just whatever you've been used to in the past, and you don't mind that caffeine, that stronger flavor, and which is the same as beer or whiskey or wine or whatever you want to compare it to. Like, if you, you know, if you like an IPA or a double hopped IPA kind of thing, or a smoky whiskey, or a big, intense red Bordeaux blend, or a California Cab or something, like those are all flavors that kind of fit. And so that's usually your darker roast. And even when I say darker, like, yeah, you can get oily coffee. When kind of the premise here that we've been trying to work off of is we can roast it darker, is usually just a longer development time, but we don't necessarily need to make it oily. Oily's,
you push it too hard.
Yeah.
Yeah, too fast.
Like, you try to minimize any chipping of it and stuff like that, because that'll change it all up.
Yeah.
And, but the oiliness, two things, I guess. One, your machines will get gucked up even more. So as the end consumer, most people don't like that. And then second off, it'll go rancid.
Yep. Yeah, and it goes stale fast.
Yeah. So even, sure, the bags are sealed and everything that we put them in. But matter. Yeah, it doesn't, like, so you can kind of still give you that flavor profile that people look for, but not have to make it, you know, where kind of get sick off of, or you could get sick off of
it. I'm always disappointed when I open a bag and it's all greasy.
Yeah.
You know, because as a former roaster, it's like, oh, you kind of, they didn't ruin it.
But
it's like, it's just like if you were to, you know, you got to, I mean, I don't eat a lot of meat, but you get a really nice cut of steak, right? Like, yeah, really nice piece of meat.
And then you charcoal it.
And then you put it on, like, you don't treat it right.
Yeah.
Like, it's all the love you put in, you get out, right? And if you're just trying to, like, pump coffee out to the consumer, yeah, sure, you can, like, do, we don't have to talk about times, because that's all kind of fairly secret, right? Like, you have your times and your blends and your, like, we could get into, like, fuel, air, drum speed, the power, all the things, yeah, right?
But the thing is, even if I do it, and even, this is what I've loved with the coffee game is, you know, like, Brandon over at Smoking Gun and Stuff, we've chatted, or Davin at Blackstripe in Vegreville, coffee and stuff. Like these guys are roasting coffees. Like, there was one of the first guys I ever talked to about it. He's my hometown.
Coffee, yeah.
And he's got the same machine. That was where the whole concept came up with this, you know, the little Alio bullet. We're like, okay, let's kind of see if we can, how we can make this work. And then Kyle at 11 Speed out on the coast, like, big cycling guy and stuff, and he's got two of these machines now.
Yeah.
So it was interesting between what cycling and then just which, you know, hospitality and people's backgrounds just do. Well, this little machine seems like you could make a little business off of it kind of thing. And then Prototype, we saw in Vancouver, had four of these in their cafe that they roast off of.
Right.
So does that mean one's, like, this is the only way you can roast coffee? No, it's just...
Oh, there's so many ways.
It's one way.
Yeah. I notice here you have an old popcorn popper.
Yeah, yeah.
Right?
Well, that's cool, yeah.
Like, you turn the crank and, yeah, and like, you... I tried that. I didn't have a lot of success with that.
Patience.
I know. I wasn't patient enough. Yeah, I wasn't. And you know what? I roasted it for a living anyway, so I was like, I don't want to roast when I'm off.
Like that? Yeah.
Yeah.
But, well, no. Okay, we're 20 minutes in right now, and so, yeah, it'll be charged up here right away to our temperature, and then we'll be ready to go.
So, still, what are we doing right now? What are we making?
The first one we're going to do is this Uganda. So, it's ready to...
Oh, I see. Yep, charged. Okay.
Charging already. So, let's just make a couple little... We're a little bit... And this is the other thing that always intrigues me with this game is when you start taking into account all the variables. So, like, right now, it's 17 degrees in here. We got barometric pressure, we got humidity, and all these little variables do, funny enough, affect.
Yeah.
So That's why it's always fun to be like, oh, it's my recipe. I'm like, how many other variables are you taking into account? Like, how long have the beans been open? How old are the beans?
Yeah.
Even that would completely change it if you could eliminate all the other variables.
I know the Ricardo's telling us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ricardo's on. He's on Monday to Friday. Right now, so okay. I'm gonna try to just follow his recipe. Right. That's the fun of this.
So like the roaster is has a charge temperature. So if you took beans from outside that are at -20 and you throw them in, it's gonna completely affect 100%. The roast progress.
Yeah.
So by taking the temperature now versus say in August or say late July when it's when it's 30 degrees, this room could be 25 degrees, and the bean temperature is going into your charge. It's going to affect it. It's going to affect it.
And that's why can you change or adjust your roast? Like we were talking about this before over coffee. Was, you know, when you were roasting back in the day, the value of the roaster and being able to adapt that situation.
Yeah.
Or the roast, like it's live. It's happening. You don't get
totally.
Just pause. Wait, I got to think about this. I got to go through so, like. The beans are happening. They're roasting as we speak. So then it becomes this whole like, oh, do I do this? Do I do this? What can I manipulate?
And the other thing too is like, you know, you have to be consistent with what you're putting in it. Like so this is a 1 kg roaster.
Yeah. So but I only put 750 in at a time.
Right. So you're 25% underloaded. Right? Yeah.
On purpose. So there's space for it to like space like.
But in a small roaster like that, if you added another 100 grams. Your dropout temp is going to go lower, and then as soon as those beans start getting inertia, their roasting momentum, then you have to adapt to that because it's going to start taking off on you. Because I remember that in the roasting thing, you'd have a support guy and he would be cutting in your recipes.
Yeah,
and you could almost tell if it were loaded wrong, if it were loaded underloaded or overloaded, because you could tell it's not staying on profile and it's. Taken off, at, you know. I think it'll be okay. Okay, yeah.
I was like, this is what moves all the air, I guess. So.
No, yeah, we'd be suffocating if we didn't have that running, so, yeah.
Okay, well, we're gonna roast some beans in game one. See if I can do what Ricardo does.
Well, he takes pretty good notes, so.
Yeah, he's got messy handwriting, though. That's a little weasel.
Well, that's not as loud as I thought it would be. It's not like you have to wear hearing protection.
No, that's true. So yeah, we're gonna make a go of this, and
so I'm looking at some of the instrumentation here. What's this telling you? Bean tap.
This might be easy to read too.
Oh, you're hooked up to it.
Yeah. Wow, so fancy. We got a little probe inside. So that's the bean tip that we'll play off of. The radar eyes, and then based on our drum temperature. Then our power fan or drum is all there, so I'll just be modifying with all this straight away.
Do you make adjustments to the fan and the drum speed at all, or is drum speed consistent?
No, drum speed is consistent, but the fan and the power are going to go up and down right away. So, but I'm just looking. The last time we were at about this temperature, similar to that. We're a little bit light.
So you're checking your notes to see the history of how it roasted and where you were at.
Well, and based on the current conditions in here, like 3 degrees difference and the humidity a little different, it does, and we'll see really quick. Either things start to move very quickly or not.
Right.
So we'll adapt accordingly, I guess, kind of feel, but...
And roast to roast, right? Like you'll roast this, and it's like it'll tell you what mood it's in, and then you can adjust, right?
Yeah.
Maybe a little bit more fuel or a little less air. And why don't you?
And then we try it at the end and see if it was any good.
Yeah, what a shitty part of the job, hey? So. In the first initial part of the roast, has it finished bottomed out? Is it bottomed out yet?
Well, here's our number. So yeah, we're just kind of getting, going on this right now. This little spike, and then the green will just slowly decline. That'll be our curve, or our rate of rise at the very end. But usually around the way this one's working is I think it's around 155, 160. Somewhere in there, we'll start to get the green. I'll start to turn yellow.
Right, like is it starting to? It looks like it's starting to just before yellowing now.
Yeah, and again, this is where this game is kind of entertaining. I've been treating the yellowing like when I mark it out on the sheet that I don't really see any green left anymore.
Yeah,
like when it's all a consistent yellow across whatever's bouncing around there, then I'll mark it. And the goal is really just, the sooner you can figure out whether we're high or low or where we're sitting at right now, the better. So I'm just going to drop this down, 144.
Can you take some fuel off?
Yeah, just a little bit. Yeah, this is my little power game and then the fan game kind of thing. So we just kind of go, kind of tip the scales a little bit.
Yeah. This is exactly how we used to roast as well. We'd have a sheet, we'd check off, you know, profile times to make sure we were where we wanted to be. And
well, and the cool thing is, with this program and the way the machines and stuff here, is that we can overlap a recipe over top of it. So, you know, that's just a time thing. If I wanted to, I could go back, figure out the last day that the conditions were identical.
Right.
And if I like the result that it achieved, then I would just plop that on top of this, and then we would just follow that.
Right.
I just do it manually right now, but it's, the goal is that you can kind of, you can get to the same result. So,
yeah, you don't have a profile loaded. You're just watching data right now.
Right.
Right. Okay.
Which, yeah, we can operate either way off of it. This one, which is based on, well, just a quick, let's do a couple quick ones today.
Yeah. Yeah.
But then, okay, like, you've roasted in the past. So, even the game of, like, degassing, like, once beans are roasted, they sit. How many days to degas? I love this because it seems like from 3 days to 7 days to 2 weeks, everybody wants different variations before there's that, like, oh, okay, it's perfect now.
Right.
You have a preference?
I don't have a preference for that, to be honest. I mean, stuff would get, that's why you have valves and bags, right?
Yeah,
so that you can package it right away.
Yeah.
And I would imagine if you're not packaging in something with a valve, then you're going to want to have that coffee sit and degas before it. For that, and that's the thing about that valve is to let all the the oxidizing gas out to keep the coffee fresh. So where I worked, we had a nitrogen plant as well. So every bag was injected with nitrogen.
Oh wow!
Yeah, which displaces.
Yeah, there's no way. I don't have any idea. I didn't hear it.
Yeah, what's the hell, man? What's going on? So now we're kind of getting into that brown sugar.
Yeah,
we're starting to see development.
165, 158, draw down time, 5, 3. So these are, and again, it's fun. This is just how we've been doing it. It's not that it's right or wrong. It's just, you know, everybody's got a little variations of it. But at the end of the game right now, it's just, it's kind of like stepping on a scale. If you step on the scale every time on the same scale, you can know whether you're up or down.
Right.
So as long as we're using the same variables, we can know whether we're short or long or high or low or where we need to adjust what kind of thing. So
I'm starting to smell the browning.
Yeah.
It smells good. So folks, I'm kind of hanging out here at Curtis's house, and as soon as I walked in the basement, it was like PTSD. I could smell like green bean and chaff and like fresh roasted coffee. Yeah, it's
a terrible aroma that walking in. Like, oh,
yeah, it's really interesting.
It's not at all like a chicken farm or anything. Either.
No, I know. Right? Yeah, we're starting to get even more. The browning's starting to happen more now, and now we're gonna start hearing first crack soon.
We're probably a couple minutes away, but yeah, let's see. In the past, right now, once that bean temperature gets around between 193 and 195, somewhere in that neck of the woods, you'll probably start hearing the first couple pops.
Yeah.
Which, yeah, we'll see if we can capture the crack on the recorder here.
Yeah, it'll probably pick it up.
It sounds like popcorn kind of thing. Like that's just,
yeah.
Like for, I guess, most people listening probably have never roasted coffee, but probably pop popcorn though.
Yeah, it's kind of the same. Which is, I mean, you can modify a hot air popcorn popper and make coffee in it. Or yeah. do you even have to modify it?
I don't know. Guys have just tried from that I've got. Yeah, you can put that.
Yeah, I'm worried about unplugging stuff in here.
Sorry, dude. Well, Steve, those beans are yours now.
Yeah, exactly.
So there's also a cool setting on this where if you just leave it unattended for too long, it'll beep. And if you don't actually hit a button, it'll actually just kill the roast.
Oh, really?
Hey? It's a safety feature built in.
Well, that makes sense. You should never walk away. I remember some of the things were like, okay, if you're going on shift, go to the bathroom.
Yeah, do all this stuff ahead of time because
you can't walk away. So you've been doing this a year. What does this do for you? You get a lot out of this? Does this give you a lot of meaning? Like this, you know, creating? Because you're an artist. Kind of, you're creating something.
Yeah, it's kind of a combination of two worlds. I guess part of it is the production world. So, you know, whether a farm background or working outside or working in the wine industry and stuff like that. Oh, you kind of heard the first pop or two there. Like, when you can create something from a raw product, it's kind of cool. Okay, are we going to call that the first crack? You tell me. Hey, you're alive right now. You call it the first crack.
Yeah, you called it before. I heard a little snap earlier.
So we say, like 192s right now? All right, 192.
I haven't been watching the data as intently as you have. Does that jive with your history?
We're in the ballpark. Absolutely. And that's usually what all we kind of play around with right now. Is as long as we're in the ballpark of whatever we're trying to do.
Which adjustment did you make there?
Both fan and power.
Right. And burn?
Burn or power, yeah.
Right.
This is infrared though, so there's no actual like flame touching it, but yeah.
Right.
So the next thing we'll play with right now is development percentage. So this one, based on historic, to get to the flavor we want, we'll start cutting the power again at about 10%. We're at 7 right now.
Yeah, so you'll leave
aromatically from here, I think.
What's that?
You'll leave very aromatic when you're
right, right. The crack is...
Yep.
So the first part of the roast is endothermic. So it's absorbing heat. It's taking heat on. And then as the cracks begin, the first and second crack, they go exothermic. They're releasing energy, which is why you need to lower your fuel, because the coffee is going to basically roast itself in a way with the energy that it's outputting back into the roaster. So that's why you need to make these adjustments. And then also, do you up the fan for smoke control?
Smoke control, it changes also. The fan works nicely with the power, and it just displaces that heat a little differently inside too. So it'll help kind of... I equate it to caramelizing onions in a frying pan. You throw a bunch of heat at it at the start, and then you kind of start decreasing, and just you want that nice golden color, but you don't need to like kind of make it. You don't need to burn it, and that's where like coffee will do the same thing.
Yep. Have you roasted with gas before?
No.
No.
And that's why this game is always entertaining, because personally, it'd be intriguing to try to watch it to learn. So development-wise, this one we're going to go to kind of a... I call it more of a medium. We're getting a little bit of smoke in this. So then we're going to see what kind of numbers we get out of this at the end. But
what's your drop? Well, you don't have to say it out loud.
You say 10 on 209... So we're gonna go to about 23%, 25.6. Total roasting time right now we're just under 12 minutes in right now.
So let me know when you're gonna drop it.
Okay.
Maybe you don't need to go and say your secret drop time out loud. You don't want to do that.
Oh, you can say it all you want.
This is
going down CS, right now. Right? Yeah. Well, I also play the development percentage game, which it's a little balancing of both. But okay, 3, you're ready to go.
Oh, wait. Yeah.
2, 1, game on.
And then, so people, I don't know if you can notice, I'm taking a video of this. But the roasting hasn't stopped yet. So this, you'll probably, I don't know if you can see it on video, but it'll darken in the tray.
Yeah.
A little bit. Because I remember when the cooling fan stops, if the tray stops, or those paddles stop, it's a disaster.
Yeah.
And, yeah. Yeah, so that's another way you can ruin coffee. Like, this whole process, this isn't just, like, cooking and then putting it on a cooling, like, baking cookies and putting it on a cooling rack.
No.
It's, well, I guess it would be. Cookies would still bake on the cooling rack and as they cool. But
if you kept the cookies on top of the hot oven that you were just cooking and expecting them to cool there, they're not going to cool as nicely or as quickly, I guess.
Oh, that's beautiful. Since you're roasting, and I don't know.
Yeah.
Since you're roasting and providing shops with your coffee, do you have any requirements? Yeah. Do you have any requirements in terms of like sanitation or certifications or anything like that? Or as a hobby roaster, can you? Well, it's not really a hobby; it's just your job.
Oh, it's a business. So if you look up on the wall, they're like, what? They need Institute of Food Safety, Food Handler Certificate, registration.
So you,
Safe Food, Canadian. Yeah, like it's all.
Right, so you had to do that.
Oh, Interior Health came, did an inspection and stuff.
They did?
Yeah, yeah.
Ah, okay. So, yeah, it's not just if you're going to be selling coffee. Is there a certain volume of bean you have to put out before you're required to get these certificates, or?
No. I think what happens, what more, like, depends on the, I guess there is a volume game also, but the biggest concern really was, or the curiosity was even with the fire department, because the, like, and the building guys were really curious, because this is kind of an unknown size of a machine for coffee roasting.
Yeah.
Compared to any of the other guys in the valve.
Right.
Like, most have a big drum stand-up roaster where, and it's gas, so which means you need a gas line, and you need exhaust ventilation, like there's, and you're in a more commercial setting, and most of these guys are open to the public too. Like, so Factor Beans is in Summerland also, so that was the whole premise and concept was, let's just roast good coffee and get it into, you know, we've done a bunch of fundraising for clubs and teams, like the Riptides out of Bow Valley we've done some with, and PACA, Particular Area Cycling Association. We've done beans for them as a fundraising base. So, and that was one of our models, was we would allocate percentage of our marketing dollars to help, actually, like, rather than using the word community as a hashtag, which everyone wants to use it, we're big community players.
Yeah.
Okay, well, what do you do?
Yeah.
Well, we give them a couple bucks, and we give them a cup of coffee, and hey, look at us.
Yeah.
We're like, well, what if we actually help you raise money to whatever your goals are that you want as a club or a team? Like, the Riptides wanted to go to Arizona for a swim camp. So we set up a cool little fundraising platform where they can go, they sell the coffee, we roast the coffee, they then provide the coffee back to the people that support their club, and we give them a bunch of money. Like, the percentage of the profits is theirs. It's like 33% of that bag goes back to that club. It's not a, you know, a 5% give back kind of thing.
Right.
And that was just something as we started kind of deal. Between now, we've got some office buildings because we're also, like, if you look on the website, the Pink headquarters is in Calgary.
Yeah.
And George, who's in the other world that I'm in, you know, is Ricardo's number two assistant. But basically, you know, we got office buildings in Calgary where that's what the grinder's for. Like, if you want the convenience of coffee in your office space, and you're, you know, instead of everybody going down to their specialty coffee shop and spending $8 or $10 a day, you can each spend $5 and we can ship you coffee, and you can put it in a fancy, you know, coffee machine or a drip, whatever you got at the office, and sit at your desk and enjoy it. And, you know, it's also more cost effective.
Yeah.
We've also worked with a couple of different, you know, wineries in the valley too, to just, again, aid to their retail program, to their the people that love the flavors. Like, it's a flavor game.
You can
sit here and you could try 10 different coffees.
They'd all be different.
Yeah. And that's with the specialty coffee versus the commercial coffee. And I guess that's probably the biggest educational difference nowadays is to, you know, Maxwell House, Nabob, Folgers, what those guys are or how big you are. There's different scales. Kind of like beer, I guess. Like, Molson Labatt's are different than, like, you know, the little guy around the corner that's...
The craft.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, craft is a small size, and there's different attention and details and the costs and putting in the raw materials. Like, we're not buying coffee beans by the container.
Right.
Coming in, roasting, like, how big a batch is you used to be able to do? Like, hundreds of kilos.
Oh, you mean on one roaster?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, or like 380 kilograms, right? So,
that's
or,
a lot
sorry,
of,
280.
280
yeah,
kilos.
Yeah, so we would load, yeah, exactly.
Like one
yeah, so
bag
what's that, like of, 500
like,
pounds? Or
so like one bag of coffee.
Green bean.
Those jute bags that the coffee comes in,
yeah,
those are 70 kilos.
Right.
So you would be putting multiple of those bags.
Oh, yeah, six.
Yeah.
Like, 6 to 7 bags. Because some origins aren't 60, some are a little less.
Yeah, 60 to 70, depends on where they came from.
Yeah.
But like, if you look right now, what you would do in one roast, you are like, that's
oh, yeah,
the
no,
inventory.
I would go through
your
inventory.
Right
no, actually, you're triple like, that, probably. Yeah,
for sure. Yeah. So, but that's the joke that people go get sometimes. So I'm like, when you realize the size difference and what that means, like, yeah, it's a cup of coffee. Like, that's, you just get shrugged off. Ah, it's just coffee.
Yeah.
You're like, okay, well, they're just carrots, or they're just eggs, or they're just whatever. Like,
well, yeah, you know, that's a good analogy. So people who may not put as much energy into the coffee they buy, you know, go to the supermarket and buy some carrots and... I'm pausing because I'm video. I can't task switch. You know, you taste a farm fresh carrot, and you know that came from a farm. Sweet. It's you know, it's full of water. It's like they're so juicy and delicious. But then you taste those big overgrown carrots in the grocery store, and they don't taste like anything.
No, it's but the they same, look like a carrot.
Yeah,
it's the same as like strawberries or tomatoes or whatever.
Yeah, they're
like,
they're all red on the outside and white on the inside.
Well, and when they get picked. They're picked young, immature, green, or whatever.
Yeah.
They're basically like stuck in a place, remove the oxygen,
keep
a reserve, and then they ripen later.
Quote, ripen, air quotes. Yo. Yeah, so it's like coffee's the same. Coffee, wine, beer, spirits.
Yeah.
Like anything. Anything you make has terroir, has craft, has like.
Well, it's no different than like if you go to France and you eat a chicken there, or you eat a chicken from BC or Alberta, or you eat one from that came out of some production facility, you know, across the ocean somewhere.
Yeah.
You know, in, I don't know, China or whatever, I don't care, wherever you want to choose from. And you're like, well, so technically they're all chicken.
Yeah, but they.
But if you put those three chickens side by side by side.
Yeah.
Hopefully most people, without all the sauces and spices, you just taste the chicken, like we talked about this morning, potatoes.
Yeah.
Like, just the base ingredient, which is what coffee is. There's, like, we can doctor that all day long if we want.
Yeah.
We can add syrups, and we can add, you can add amaretto or Grand Marnier to it, and you can add whatever.
Yeah.
And that changes it, but this is just the raw product to start.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's
that's
cool.
That's the fun of it.
Yeah, and you know what, the other thing, too, with this as well, I think there's a lot of people out there making things like coffee, clothing, like beer, wine, spirits, small Canadian businesses that are putting a lot of love and passion into this product, and we should try to support them, right? We should really try to support
more than like, just like I support them. Oh yeah, how?
Yeah,
or how often? I guess it's really it's not even you know, if you go to the farmer's market once a month, but the rest of the time you go to Walmart, well.
Yeah.
There's your competing factors kind of thing, you know?
And the way things are now, it's like often I think people assume they're going to go to a farmer's market to buy Pink Weasel coffee, and it's going to cost way more than you would in the store, but it's not really so. It's not really the case. And even if you had to pay a couple bucks more, you're still supporting a Canadian business. Like, I bet your town, people are listening right now. There's probably someone roasting coffee in your town.
Yeah.
Right. You know, there's probably somebody roasting in your town. And if you could find them and buy their coffee.
Sure.
You know.
Well, that's the whole local thing, though. No matter what it is. Like, you know, we go on a road trip somewhere. And, fine. We'll bring a little bit of our own wherever we're going just to, you know, make sure we always have something good to enjoy. But usually it is that, well, you support whatever area it is that you're, you know, staying the night or enjoying a festival in, or you're, you know, an event, or you're just taking it in because, you know, there's some cool natural features or whatever. So yeah, you go and you support the local because you're in their backyard.
Yeah.
And it goes, it's kind of an old school concept almost, like rather than corporate. And if, it's only if you consciously pay attention. It's kind of like walking around with a to-go cup that you just picked up on your drive-thru and then saying, I care about the environment.
Yeah.
Well, yeah? How much? Like, plastic this, you know, like, not reusable, everything's single-use. Yeah. And then, so on one hand, you're like, oh, I care about this. But then you're like, you're literally having the other hand, the complete opposite of what you're talking about.
Yeah.
So, and that's how, why, you know, call it the little guy and the big guy.
Yeah.
And more people over the last 4 or 5 years have become the little guy again. They wanted to, you know, follow a passion, follow a dream, follow a, you know, maybe some intuition or just necessity. Or they're like, ah, you know what? Life is short. I might as well try it. And have at it.
Yeah.
So.
So are you telling me I should go buy an R1 roaster and start roasting on my patio?
I'm not telling you, but I'm just saying it's not a bad idea. So, yeah, we'll just complete this one, then we'll throw in one more set of beans and,
So,
now, because I'm like triple tasking, so just multiple.
Yeah, I know, and I know it's kind of hard. It's hard to be. I feel like I'm distracting you a little bit.
No, it's all good. That's why. That's the beauty of this is that I can kind of, we can that can stay where it is right now, and we can still exist in chat versus like.
You're like, what are you saying?
Oh no, that button. Oh no, this. Where did I go? Oh no, I spilled the beans, and then all of a sudden.
Yeah. No, you're very smooth and composed, considering there's someone in your space.
So this is perk of being the number 2 guy. You know, that Ricardo guy is really smooth.
He likes his piece. So, where can people find out more about
Pink Basil Coffee? The beauty with coffee, that, and it was a huge attraction, was that literally you go online and go to the website. Instagram has it even right now, but pinkbasilcoffeecompany.com, which maybe we'll have to find a way to, you know, my back 40 it kind of thing. But yeah, no, it, like, wherever you are, coffee shippable.
Yep.
I can put it in a bag, put it in a box, send it.
Yeah.
It shows up at your door. If some guy drops it, it's not gonna break.
Yeah.
You know, if it sits outside for a little bit, just no concern. And whatever, the bags are sealed. You know, if you leave it in a puddle for a couple days, probably not the best spot
not
to keep
likely.
It.
Yeah,
like, don't leave it in water. Don't throw it in the lake and
brew it in the puddle.
Yeah, probably not ideal. But other than that. Yeah, like, if you're around Summerland right now or the Okanagan, the Artisans of the Okanagan have in Summerland, Flambe at Home, which is a cool little boutique food preparation or pre-made meal, I guess, delivery service / pickup option. They have a blend also. Those are the two right now. Granny's across the road, fruit stand, has a blend. And the cool thing is, because we have enough options, no two have the same.
Yeah, right.
So it's not like, oh, well, I'm going to get a better deal there. Like, no, we did it on purpose. Like, those guys are carrying this, these guys are carrying this, and those guys have that. And if you like any of them, go support it. Go see what those guys also have.
Yeah.
Because they're all small. And that's kind of the cool part of it right now.
Yeah.
Like, in our neck of woods here, Solvero Winery, we did a little project with them. Allison, again, she's got a label and stuff like that. Like, she did her own winemaker's tasting notes. And
oh, for your coffee?
Yeah, so we basically worked with her. So
she did your...
that's hers. So yeah. Solvero, like, that's their label. It fits their branding. It's kind of a cool option. She wrote up tasting notes just like she would for wine.
Yeah.
And now they have another option, another, I guess, retail idea.
Yeah.
And another thing to put in their cup.
Yeah.
That's the other thing with coffee. Compared to wine being in the Okanagan, it's more socially acceptable to drink this. Yeah. You know, if we would have, I guess we could have gone with mimosas in the morning or something.
Yeah, right.
You know, but like, you don't wake up like, okay, I need a quick gin and tonic and start my day now. Okay, yeah, great.
Well, cool, man. Really happy to be here and seeing, like, we've been talking for a while, and
yeah.
I had the privilege of tasting some of your stuff, and
also have a background in it. See, that's the thing that's always kind of funny with coffee too, is who's played with it, who's worked in it, who enjoys it at what level. Like, there's another Kenyan over at Sage Hills here in Summerland. He actually roasted for East Van Roasters.
Yeah.
And it wasn't until a random occurrence we started talking about coffee. I said, "Why used to roast coffee?" You're like, "What? Like, what? Like, just the most random, like, out of nowhere." But yeah, it's. I guess the other thing that is cool with coffee is people don't really realize that it is a big agricultural industry.
Yeah.
In a lot of spots in the world.
Yeah.
Like, you know, you go to certain places like the Okanagan right now. Like, we have all kind of fruits and wine, and obviously the lake is here and stuff. And you know, if you're by the coast, okay, well, there's the fishing industries. And but like, there's this cool coffee belt, and that is a lot of people's livelihoods.
Yeah.
You know, it's people. Sometimes I guess there's just no understanding. Maybe if you don't, if you're not in it, or you don't ever see it, that like. How does that little bean, where does it come from?
Like, yeah, again, it's like the same thing. Like, where does our food come from? Where do our clothes come from? That's a huge thing now, right? Sure. This is where our clothes come from. Like, factories of enslaved children in foreign countries, right? And and it's like, I'm not saying coffee's like that. But it's like, to know like, how coffee is grown.
Yeah.
Like, it's actually a cherry that you eat. Tastes delicious, right? Yeah. But that just ends up as mucilage. That ends up in the soils to grow more coffee cherries, to grow more coffee. Well, and then coffee
now
beans,
some people are also, they're starting to take that, and if they can dry it, and then they're making teas out of that, and there's a little caffeine. Like, the other one that's kind of interesting is all that silver skin that's left over.
Yep.
So, like, when we go to clean out...
Yeah, that's like aeration for your garden? Like, what else would you use that for?
You can drink it.
You can drink that?
Yeah.
I know. You can drink chaff?
Yeah.
Chaff tea?
Yeah.
Really? What does it taste like?
I'll make you a cup.
That's crazy.
You can explain that one then on the next one.
Oh, that's so
funny. Actually, you know what? Take that jar home.
Oh, are you sure?
I'm making more right now.
Where are you going to get more chaff?
But, like, I just put it in a little, like, my little tea filter and just pour hot water over it.
Yeah. You can press it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it just comes
What does it taste like? Well, I'll find out.
Yeah. I know. I'm not even going to... You figure out what it tastes
so
like.
Interesting. I never thought... Because where I work, we used to just... We had a chaff trailer. And it would just get full of chaff.
Yeah, the animals will love it and they'll eat it.
No, interesting. I never thought we'd consume that.
Well,
yeah.
See,
Making it last.
Well, but this is the conversation, too, was... Like, at Arts of the Okanagan, the little, like, boutique in Summerland here, there's a lady that's producing, it's basically the same thing, but with cocoa, or cacao.
Yeah.
Where once you roast a cacao bean, it's the same thing. It's just, we'll try to explain it because you can't see it, obviously, on a podcast, but right now, if you picture a peanut, when you crack open a peanut shell, and there's a little red skin on the outside of a peanut, that's basically what we're talking about right now. And it's just a byproduct.
Any nut that comes out of a shell has, or even think of peas, like a legume will have like a skin.
The same idea, So, but she's been bagging basically that same part and calling it chocolate tea.
Interesting.
And some people love it, some people don't, but it's a byproduct. So, yeah, I can go throw it in the garden, feed it to the pigs or the chickens, whatever, but throw in my compost, or... Can you use it one more time before, you know?
Yeah. The thing that I used to love, this would happen on occasion, is some people might not know, but like coffee is often intercropped with other plants. So it's like you'll have coffee, which could be grown with chat, which is kind of like a stimulant plant that some of these South American regions will eat. So it could be chat and cacao, right? So we would like do a roast. And then, because we're using a big machine, there's a destoner, right? Okay. Which you don't probably have to worry about here as much.
No, I pulled a few little ones out.
Do you have a magnet in there?
No.
Right. So we'd have, like, a destoner, so the cooling tray would dump through a destoner, and would get sucked up into a container, where then you dump it into a bin. But that process was just to pull rocks.
Challenge.
And pins, and coins, and all sorts of shit.
Well,
but it's tuned for the weight of roasted coffee beans, so it's and you're doing it such that when you're sucking up the coffee, you're not actually busting the beans. So part of the QC is to look in the bin and see if there's broken beans, so you know like your paddles are set right, your cooling tray paddles are set right, and stuff like that. But you'd reach in there and you'd go scoop rocks, and sometimes you'd pull out a handful of cacao beans, roasted cacao beans. So we'd take that off somewhere, and we'd like peel them and get them all open, and basically it's like eating
like cocoa. Like yeah. just, but
bitter,
you,
but tasty.
It's a bit bitter, but yeah. it is, but it still has the fat in it.
Yeah.
And so it's really delicious. And so it was always a bonus. You'd be like, oh, a handful of chocolate.
Well, but that's like, actually, go back to East Van Roasters, though, which, and Doug Graff, roast out of there and stuff, which is kind of cool. But they actually have half of their facility, and they're tiny also in Vancouver, but if you get a chance to go check it out, right next, like, the other room, they roast cacao.
Right.
So they make chocolate and chocolate bars and chocolate there, and then the other half is coffee.
Right.
So this is beautiful combination, and the similarities are definitely there.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. Yeah.
But yeah, it's like anything else. It's whatever you want to do. Like,
the other thing you get sometimes is popcorn.
Oh.
Yeah. So sometimes they're intercropped with corn, right?
Sure, yeah.
So
yeah.
your cooling tray would open, and you wouldn't get a ton, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But you'd see this white thing pop out, and there'd be, in your cooling tray, there'd be popcorn.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
you'd wait for it to come around the paddle, like, oh, you just eat it right out of the cooling tray. Don't let anyone see you put your hands in the cooling tray, though.
No, yeah,
not
yeah.
in an industry like that. But yeah, you'd often find like little bits of, like, yeah, chocolate, corn.
Yeah.
Never found chat.
Well, see, but the thing
yeah,
is,
it's just elite.
The size you guys were operating too on, like, you know, like, just, we're doing a kilo at a time. Like,
yeah.
I've seen a couple of rocks come out here and there, but we're on such a smaller capacity that you can hand pick out stuff
right.
if you, like, and there's multiple trips, like, between dumping it into the bins for storage and then, you know, weighing out. Like, there's so many steps to the process that you're like, oh, yeah, hey, what, that's a foreign object, like.
Yeah.
And, like, little pebbles are pretty much the only thing I've ever pulled out. It's...
Right. You got to watch it, though. Like, I know
yeah.
with the Indo coffee, because the way it's dried in the sun.
Yeah.
On busted up concrete patios, right? Oftentimes you get rocks, big rocks, and it can wreck your grinder. I'd be curious if you had, like, a wand with a rare earth magnet on it. You just
what
suck it into green beans and kind of skirt it around to see if it would pick up.
See, and I think that is the one thing with a specialty coffee mill is there's a little bit more attention to those details in the production and the processing.
Yeah, because you're using like jars, so you'd be able to see the green bean
yeah.
and any foreign objects. Or, yeah.
Versus like, oh, here, take those five bags, dump them,
exactly,
cut them, whatever.
Yeah, you're just cutting bags in.
Hurry up, go,
yeah,
yeah,
let's go.
We're on schedule. So, but I think that's the other thing too is, the producers of where we're getting these beans from, there is such a desire to, I guess, a pride that goes with what they're doing. And so that these are those hand-selected, hand-picked, like all those details are kind of, versus like, let's go to the container, whatever, just, you know, process it, get it dumped in, hurry up, you know, the boat's leaving kind of thing, and off we go.
Yeah. I'm, it's pretty common that containers fall off ships. Can you imagine? Like that would be a container of coffee. That'd be a forest of coffee being dumped in the ocean.
And that's
and that, I'm sure that happens. Oh,
which, yeah, there goes the price up again.
Oh yeah, exactly right.
But okay, well yeah, we'll finish this.
This has been great, man.
Yeah,
it was really cool to see you operate, and it makes me actually have a little bit of goosebumps right now, just a little bit. Yeah, because it's pretty cool to
little flashbacks. And like,
a little bit, yeah. But this is more manageable. You know, there's way less pressure. Like, there's a lot of pressure. Like, you're basically driving a semi truck. You know, trying to control energy of a natural product, and so, I mean, this is different. But you're still focused. You're super focused and attentive and paying attention to what's going on. And with a big roaster, so much can go, you can burn the whole fucking building down. If something goes wrong, you could burn the building down. Like, seriously.
Which, that's a lot of responsibility if you think of the whole picture. Not just,
it is.
I show up for my 9-to-5 job.
Yeah. And it's like you're handling a product, a commodity that's worth a lot of money.
Yeah.
And so you have to pay attention. So I remember, like, yeah, if you went to work and you didn't have a good sleep. Yeah.
That's not,
yeah, you would have to call. You usually we'd have a support person with us.
Yeah.
And if they were a roaster and you weren't on it, if you could see in some people, and that's the other thing, there's so much to it, like fatigue, life situations.
Sure, if you're thinking about something else,
oh my
something
God,
home,
yeah.
whatever's going on,
yeah.
you're distracted.
Yeah.
That's not a good
things
thing,
can go wrong. And I experienced that with myself, of course, but with other roasters, you could see that they weren't having a good day.
Yeah.
And you could see the frustration. I remember one day someone lost like two roasts. So we're talking about, like, it was on a different roaster, but like 600 kilograms of coffee. Two of them.
And that's crazy.
It's a lot, and the dude got pulled. Obviously, it's sure. Like no, you're not fired, but it's like you're done. What's going on? Roastmaster would take him aside and like, what's going on? And sometimes it's like, oh, my girlfriend and I had a big fight, you know, and sure. It's like. It's like that energy that you're bringing into the environment. Yeah. It's gonna go in that coffee, whether it's like maybe just not attended to correctly and not sticking to profile, or it's burned up and in the garbage if you're not focusing. So people need to understand that it's not just popping popcorn.
And that's the beauty is there is an art and a science.
Yeah.
And like most things, I guess that you're producing, you know. Yeah, you can get a cookie cutter machine to go and produce the same one thing over and over and over again, but
which is what the big roasters do now. They're all automated.
Right.
Yeah.
But again, you get what you pay for. You know, the temperature they do it at, the acidity that comes out of it, like why people have heartburn and whatever, like, you know, indigestion, and people can't drink it's the coffee. I'm like, well, sometimes it's also, you know, how it was processed. That's a big thing. Like, you know, but nobody's ever. The world's too busy for people to take the time to think about, like, they're just like, oh, I can't drink coffee. Like, no, you just can't drink that kind of coffee.
And people is like, I don't like coffee. It's like, we haven't tried all the coffee yet, if you say that. I mean, yeah.
It's like, I don't like Chardonnay. Wait, you tried all the Chardonnay grapes from all the winemakers across the world, no matter how it was made. You had one glass one time that was over one thing or the other. It was too intense or whatever.
Or it wasn't paired well with what you're putting in your mouth. And it's like, oh, that's horrible. I went to a thing once in Whistler, and there was a chef there, and he was intentionally mispairing wines and foods. So he would pair one. Yeah. He would say, taste this. It was like, oh, my God. Like, it just the way it worked. And then he's like, now try this. And it was just like, that wine is horrible. No, it's not the wine that's horrible, actually. That's a great wine.
It's the combination.
But you're eating it with this food, which would be great with a, I don't know, a sweeter white rather than a dry red. You know, and it can completely color your opinion
of it
wine and coffee.
But no different, though. Like, even today. You have a coffee and you have a coffee black by itself. Then you put a little sugar, or you take a bite of, again, bread and jam.
Yeah.
Or something sweet.
Yeah, you said, like, did you taste the caramel in it? It's like, no, dude, I have raspberry jam in my mouth. I can't taste it.
Yeah, it's an egg flavor. What is
it? Yeah, egg flavor,
No, I put pepper on it. I got this. And that's why it's always funny, because pros or cons. Like, you know, I had this amazing glass one time. Well, what else was it that was with it, kind of thing? Was it the ambiance? Like, wine game, even. Like, and this coffee thing is kind of fun for that, but the shape of the cup.
Yeah, the way it's delivered on your palate. Yeah,
sure.
Can make a difference.
And people don't think about all these little things, like, ah, it's coffee, I put it in a cup, I drink it, that's it. I'm like, if you take, and we've done it with wine, and sure enough, like, I talked to guys in Europe, the shape of those, even those espresso cups, when that shot gets pulled and it comes out of your actual espresso machine, the shape of the cup, whether those walls are just straight up and down, like horizontal, or are they actually a little bit of a V-shape?
Yeah.
Well, how that hits and the crema that forms and the aromatics that come off of it, and then again, how far you tilt back your head or don't. Like, there's all these little things.
Do you cup your coffee?
Yeah.
Yeah, like the slurp and spit?
Yeah.
Or swallow.
Yeah.
But it's like that the act, you'll see coffee tasters
there's an aeration also.
Yeah, you're aerating it, but you're also atomizing it and spraying it all over your tongue. So you're getting it like
all the taste buds
tip and on the sides. And I see people, like, even drinking wine, right? And I've taught my daughter this because she's very courageous with foods, right? Yeah. And I'm like, taste this. What is it? Taste it. But don't say yuck. Just put it in your mouth and move it around your mouth. Because you have to move it around
to get the
whole thing.
The first one or two times you do that, the first, like...
Yeah, you mostly need to prime it.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is... And it does matter. Like, when I worked in Mexico, we did tequila tastings.
Yeah.
Well, same thing with tequila.
People slam tequila. But it's like, no, there's some really nice tequila.
Sure.
Where it's a sipping or rum or all sorts of things.
Whatever it is. Yeah. But it's the appreciation.
Yeah.
And again, the commercial versus the whole specialty world. But, like, you take the time, and you're all of a sudden, the first sip or two, your mouth is like, okay, now I'm ready to taste.
Right.
Like, if you just had, I don't know, you had a cigarette, you had a Caesar salad, you had a piece of gum, and you go to have a glass of wine.
Yeah.
how do you expect that the very first sip you have is going to be amazing?
No, it's not.
Probably not.
This beer has a minty undertone.
Yeah. Or like, ooh, weird. It's got the smokiness too. You're like,
so. Yeah, I just encourage people to, when they're you see people drinking spirits or wine, and it's like you see them mouthful it and swallow it, right? It's like, ah, that's a nice red wine, meh, kind of thing. It's like, no, like, take it in, move it around, let it, because a lot of your taste comes from your nose, right? So you need to like,
well, even okay,
keep it in your face
even
for a while.
Coffee though, if you open up a bag of coffee beans, smell the beans, then grind it, and now smell the ground coffee, like it usually becomes just even more intense. Yeah.
And the other thing is smell the odor with your mouth open.
Big deal.
Yeah, absolutely. Like don't smell just through your nose. Like, you want to bring it in through your nose and mouth because it'll saturate.
Well, and going through the spirits world, when we tasted spirits like that, where there's bourbon, tequila, anything above 30% alcohol kind of thing, we always used to make sure that you keep your mouth open. That way your eyes don't tear up.
Right.
And you can actually can smell the profile of higher alcohol.
Like the vapor of it,
So that'll dissipate. But if you just take a quick sniff, you're like, oh,
you're
like, oh, I don't like it. Like, I'm no kidding, you're not going to like it. But coffee is that fun game. Like, support your local whatever roasters in your area kind of thing. Hey, order online. Order the My Back 40 blend from, you know, in the near future.
Yes, please.
but that's the fun of it is it's a, you know, did you like it? How did you drink it? How did you make it?
Yeah.
We'll make one blend. People will drink it 10 different ways.
Yeah.
And they'll taste 10 different things.
Yeah.
And they're all right.
Exactly.
That's the beauty. Yeah. It's like, you were wrong. Like, well, you weren't wrong at all. Like, usually there's a direction and a little kind of funnel and a profile, like, you know, that some things are fruitier, some things are chocolatier. That's kind of just the direction of...
Sorry, it's like, that's why there's tasting notes on things, because sometimes, like, it happened today, like, where you were asking, did you taste the caramel and the sweetness of that coffee?
Yeah.
And it's like, well, one, my mouth was tainted with something else, but then two, it's like, sometimes you need the seed planted. So when you read a tasting profile or a tasting notes and it says fruity, or we had an Ethiopian that was like, it tasted like blueberry.
Well, that's unusual. Well, that's why this little wheel, though.
Right.
Like, that's our game right there. So we start in the middle, like, nutty cocoa, spices, roasted, green vegetable, sour, fermented, fruity,
floral. Yeah, and there's probably taints. Where are the taints?
Well, and then, then we just start working our way out even for, so like, rubber, skunky, petroleum, medicinal, salty, phenolic, meaty,
and it's funny, I remember in Indonesian coffees, we had a really nice single origin in Indonesian, and one of the tasting notes, one of the profiles was asphalt. And it's like, it wasn't a bad thing. It was just kind of like...
You're just trying to make a relatability.
Yeah.
It's, like, it's not...
Yeah, it tastes like
didn't
dirt.
Put asphalt in it.
No, it just has a... But kind of... Well, I liked it. It was kind of an earthy, dirty kind of flavor. Well, and it was good.
For comparison's sake, with wine, like Rieslings.
Yeah.
Aged Rieslings can give you this, they call it medicinal, or plasticky kind of note. And that's an aging property. And some people... There is a...
You can
petrol.
Yeah, you can pick it out.
Yeah.
But when it's just layered with all the other flavors, I mean, you can pick it out one way, or you can just allow it to be a part of the tasting profile, right?
And I guess the thing with tasting notes that was always interesting, or is go back to this whole pairing thing, is especially with food. Well, if you can describe the food a similar way that you can describe the drink,
right?
Usually the pairing works.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
If something's too bold of one and too light of another, whatever it is, like you get too light of a wine and you get too strong of a food, like, you know, a Pinot Gris and a steak probably aren't going to work.
Right.
But a big Bordeaux red blend and a light salad also aren't going to work.
Right.
You know, like, and that's why, like, if you said a fish. But people always have this old school, like, oh, is it chicken or fish? I'm like, that's a starting point, usually.
Yeah.
But also, how is it prepared?
Yeah.
Are you smoking it? Are you putting butter on it? Is there a spice? Like,
some herbaceousness that doesn't... Yeah.
So all of a sudden, the base protein or whatever, or vegetable, whatever it is part of it. But it's not the only part of it, because you've also manipulated four other things. Like, well, why didn't this go with my fish? Well... Because you put all this other stuff that you didn't account for, so that's why.
Yeah.
You know, coffee no different. Like, well, I had it with a cinnamon bun. Okay. Or did you have it, you know, just black by itself? Did you add some hazelnut creamer mix, dude. I don't know.
Yeah. I always encourage people, especially with craft, anything.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, spirits, especially because you mix, but like a craft beer, you wouldn't ordinarily. But with coffee, like, taste it black first. Try it black first. And I don't like black coffee. No, you might, though. Like, I can go either way, but I, like, this morning, it's like, I'm not going to put anything in this coffee. Like, I know how hard you worked on it. And I know what you're trying to, like, you're not bragging, but you're like, here, try this one. And because you're proud of it. And I'm like, well, I'm going to drink it black. I'm not going to put a bunch of oat milk in it.
And to me, it's always interesting because, you take the same coffee, and five people sit at the same table.
Yeah.
All the environment is the same. Their background is all different, which is, what are they going to smell and taste? Because the coffee hasn't changed.
Yeah, yeah.
That's kind of the fun of it. Yeah. So that's why the game is always like, well, what do you smell? What do you taste? Like, what's your background of a palate or just understanding your relatability as to, like, oh, okay, this is what I think this is.
Yeah.
Or I smell this. You're like, no, again. And sometimes that's why those tasting meals are a great starting point, because it's not that... Not that you don't know what it smells like. It's just that if you don't do it often,
it's the thing.
You're like, oh, yeah, okay, I see the word raspberry.
Yeah.
Or I see the word celery. Oh, yeah. That's what the smell and taste is. Or like that was always the joke with in the wine game, like, you know, fresh cracked tennis balls. The smell of, like, when you open, or like fresh cut garden hose. You're like, how does that smell like? But whatever you're around, like, you know, I don't know if it's like the texture of clothing or something. Like, like silky smooth. Well, if you've never felt silk,
you wouldn't.
It doesn't mean anything to you.
It is this experience, and I think too, just talking about it with other people.
Yeah.
So I do taste I really taste a lot of like pineapple in that or something. Yeah. It's like, oh yeah, there is some citrus.
Well,
or, you know,
but and even something
is
like
pineapple citrus. No, I don't think it is.
But even like an orange, like if you go to some countries where they actually squeeze fresh orange juice. Like, oranges grow on trees. What do you want? You want orange juice for breakfast? Here, we'll cut an orange, squeeze it.
Yeah.
That's orange juice. Oh, this is an orange juice. So, like, you're just used to a different manipulated sugar-based color added.
And I want 12 ounces of it.
Yeah.
Not, like, 4 ounces.
Of, like, actual intense
vitamin C. Actual orange juice. Yeah.
And so, you know, well, that's not orange. You're like, it's not Sunkissed. It's different than, like, Sunkissed. Or Minute Maid or whatever.
Or 50-year-old Jell-O.
Or 50-year-old Jell-O, my mom will love that one. But that's the thing, though. Coffee's just a fun thing. Plus, it's an easy topic for people to enjoy, to how they enjoy it, when they enjoy it. You know, is it celebratory? Is it a daily thing? Is it a ritualistic?
Yeah.
So,
let's throw some coffee, man.
Okay.
Thanks for sharing.
Absolutely.
All right. Talk soon.
Yeah, absolutely. Cheers, buddy.
I want to thank Curtis again for his time and thank all of you for tuning in. I hope you enjoyed it. You know what? It's funny. When I walked into this house, I had a little bit of PTSD because I could smell chaff. I could smell coffee. I could smell coffee roasting equipment. It was strange. It was like I was walking into work where I used to work. Yeah, it was really odd. But he's got such a wicked setup. It's awesome. It's really inspiring. He's doing a really great job. So check them out. Pink Weasel Coffee Company. Honestly, I've had my share of espresso and coffees made for me. Curtis has a very discerning palate, and the coffees that I was served during my stay here have been stellar. And it's not only the preparation, but it's the product. He takes a lot of care and attention. Watching him roast, he was roasting basically the way we roasted at like the high commercial level. Detail oriented, taking notes, very analytical about what he's experiencing in the coffee, what he's seeing, what he's hearing, what he's smelling. He's super tuned in. So it was pretty rad to see an artist performing his craft. So make sure you check them out and get some coffee from them. And like I said at the beginning, keep an eye out for a MyBack 40 blend. And I look forward to bringing that to you in the future. I'm not going to go on. I know how verbose I can be, and I'm going to just cut this off because this was a great chat, and I've got a lot of other podcasts to put together right now, so I'm going to cut this one short and just wish you the best. Make sure you get out there and ride your bike. Don't forget, keep the rubber side down.